In today's show, we're going to be looking at point guard tiers to get you ready for your fantasy basketball draft. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. Indeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. As I said, today we're talking point guard tiers. Before I do that, a couple of pieces of business. Basketball Monster is now open for the 2020-2021 season. So you can go get your memberships there. You can come and tell me how shit the projections are, whatever you want to do. Have articles going up. There's all the projections are done for their first pass through. Get them out real quick so we can get ready for this season to begin. And also, don't forget, join the Discord server. The link is in the show notes. It's in the description below. So go join that and join a bunch of people talking fantasy basketball. It's a great way to do it. So jump in that Discord server. So now let's bring him in. Basketball Monster's own Matt Smith, the doyen of the positional tiers. He's here every year to do this and he's back again. Matt, welcome.
Josh, it's good to talk to you again. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, but we're back. Normally we do this in like October or September every year, but of course we're a couple of months delayed from that. But we're here to talk point guard tiers. Now, for those of you who are new to this program or new to Basketball Monster, what are we talking about here, Matt? What's the tiers?
Yeah, so basically what we're trying to do is group players of similar overall value. And for that, we use our standard league 8-cat value based on your projections, Josh. I'm at Basketball Monster, and I should reiterate that 8-cat value, not 9-cat value. But what it does, it allows us to identify positional scarcity. And by that, I mean which players you might need to draft early and which players you can maybe wait on a little bit until later in your draft. Now, historically, we know that point guards come off the board early, and we have 15 point guards inside the top 50 rankings come this season. So therefore, if you do want a good point guard, or ideally two, you are going to need to draft them early on. So, hopefully that makes a little bit of sense. And what we've also tried to do this year is there will be some players who will be across multiple positions. So, for instance, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will probably play a fair bit of point guard and shooting guard. I've listed him in both articles this year. So that's an example just to we always get questions, oh, why isn't this player here? Why isn't it that player there? So hopefully by having a few extra players across the different articles and podcasts, that will help people, compare different players.
Yeah, so what we're trying to do, because people go, why isn't Drew Holiday in your point guard tiers? And so we've got him in shooting guard. Well, now we're trying to just combine them across. And I think what also is important to note with the tiers is if someone is a tier 3 point guard, that doesn't mean that's the same as a tier 3 power forward or a tier 3 center. It's not how it works. It's not like, well, everyone in tier 3 is in that same area. We're talking about specifically for these positions, so you sort of understand where drop-offs occur in those particular areas. But That's enough talking about it, because let's crack into it and let's have a look at point guards. Tier 1, there's one bloke at the moment who's sitting there all on his own, mate.
It is, and of course it's James Harden from the Houston Rockets. He's been the number one player in 8-cat for the last 4 seasons and inside the top 5 for the last 8. He's had an incredible run. He goes into the season with that potential trade cloud over his head, which is a small concern for us heading into draft soon. And also Mike D'Antoni no longer coaching there in the Houston. We know his up-tempo offense just suited Harden's game perfectly. So that could have a slight impact on Harden as well. But I think right now, with all the information we have, you still need to take James Harden as number one.
Yeah, I think you do. And look, even if he does go to Brooklyn, it's going to have an impact. There's no doubt. Look, he was able to maintain, he's got such a buffer on everyone, right? That he's able to maintain number one with the addition of Russell Westbrook, with the addition of Chris Paul the year before. He had such a buffer on everybody that he's able to maintain that. Now, it's a little bit different with Irving and Durant, if that is the case in Brooklyn. But even if he drops, he's got such a buffer between the next group of guys that maybe he just gets into a real mishmash of 5 players there, and maybe he's not number one, maybe he's number three. He's not going to all of a sudden become the 20th best player or the fourth best point guard or something like that. He's just going to come back to the pack a little bit more than he did this season. So while there is a risk involved in it, it's not like, oh my God, this is going to absolutely blow up my draft if I take Harden that high. There is obviously a risk there. Maybe you do not want to consider him at number one, but I think it just sort of flattens that pack a little bit more. Now, in tier two, there's a bunch of players here, and these are all first round type players, but they're all pretty close in their value, Matt.
Yeah, they are. We've got Steph Curry from the Warriors, Damian Lillard from the Trailblazers, Luka Doncic, my favourite player from the Mavs, and Trae Young. We've still got him there with the Hawks. We know that the Hawks have loaded up this offseason and put a couple of extra players in Bogdan Bogdanovic and Danilo Gallinari around Trae Young, but he's still elite in points, assists and free throw. Luka Doncic, he could easily average 30, 10 and 10 this season, which is just insane. Steph Curry, coming back from that broken hand, he'll be ready to go to start the season. And if he returns to the form he showed prior to that, we know he's a top five player. And Damian Lillard, how good is he? Career high in points, assists, threes and field goal percentage last season, and just super reliable, never misses a game.
Yeah, look, it is. He is important. Like he was a third-ranked player last year, in large part because of the huge bump that he had in the bubble where he was playing like 40 minutes a night. So that's not a realistic expectation for him to be there. The Trae Young one, a lot of people are worried about that, but I think we need to realize the way that NBA offenses work. Like when you've got a guy like Young, they still get the bulk of things. It's the other guys that generally have to adjust to a degree. Even when we saw Durant join Steph Curry, like both guys took a marginal dip back, but it wasn't much. Like they dropped, what, from being like the number one and number two players to like number four and number five. Like they don't, everyone else is the player that takes that step back. Clint Capela's touches will go down. You know, Cam Reddish will see fewer touches. Bogdanovic will take a step back. It's not going to be Young just losing everything because, you know, Gallinari needs his 20 shots a game. That's just not how that's going to work necessarily. If we move on to tier three. A couple of guys in that list, a couple of former teammates in that list, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. Both worries about both of those guys, Matt, because Kyrie, we know the injuries, whether it's his knee or his shoulder, and LeBron with the, you know, all those whispers about, well, is he just going to sit games out because it's so close to the finals?
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's at an extremely short off-season, probably the shortest in league history, so you have to think that the Lakers will be cautious with James, particularly early on in the season, and give him some rest. And Kyrie Irving, as you said, that durability has always been a question. And how will the Nets and new coach Steve Nash handle him and Kevin Durant to get them through the season, but also at the same time get enough basketball in them to make sure they're cherry ripe come playoff time?
The thing with LeBron is, right, I reckon for the last 4 or 5 years, Matt, we've heard, look, LeBron's going to take his foot off the gas. LeBron's going to defer to others. LeBron's is going to take it easy. And it literally never happens. Like, it just has not happened once. You hear it, oh, is this Kyrie's going to be the man in Cleveland? All right, cool. Is this going to really take a step back to Anthony Davis? Yeah, no worries. But everything about his numbers, they're always the same. Like, nothing changes. And we hear it all the time, he's going to take all these games off. He's going to rest. Like, he barely sat out a game at all last year. And yes, it's a different scenario here. But until it actually happens, that's when I'll believe it. Because I don't know how many times we've heard it, that he's just going to go easy. He's going to just coast through the regular season. And I guess he does coast when you compare it to his playoff performances. But it's not. It's just the same numbers that he does every single year for 10-plus years. He's basically the same guy. So I'm not expecting him to all of a sudden come in and play every second game and play 26 minutes a night and just, you know, hey, KCP, you go get your shots. Like, that's just not what is going to happen, in my opinion.
No, exactly. And the way that the NBA is probably going to schedule their season around maybe having some bubble games and you know, when they go into California, you can play the Clippers and the Warriors and the Kings and all those sort of teams. There won't be that long haul of travel, which will help LeBron as well. They can maybe let him rest a bit more around practices. But yeah, he averaged a career high assist last season at 10.2, which is just insane for someone who's, what, 35, 36 like I said, it just continues to produce. It's incredible.
There you go. Foot off the gas, LeBron James. Let's go into tier four. There's one bloke sitting in there, a guy that was a big surprise last year, Matt. He's now as a member of your Phoenix Suns, and that is Chrisy Paul.
Yeah, he was a big surprise last year. I was I shied away from him a little bit in drafts. That durability as well, like we mentioned with Kyrie Irving, is the major question around Paul coming into this season again. 36 years of age before the season's done. I don't quite trust his body to stay healthy, but yeah, he's a beautiful fit there in Phoenix next to Devin Booker. I think he'll help out DeAndre Ayton as well. And yeah, there's no reason why you can't take Chris Paul with a second round pick. You just do need to be aware that he might miss games throughout the season.
I think there's almost zero chance that he is as healthy as he was last year. Like, that's the anomaly. Maybe he is, but I don't think you should bank on it. But if when he's on the court, he's going to produce. I think we're pretty comfortable with saying that. I think he's probably going to play a little bit more in terms of minutes than he did with the Thunder, because there's no Dennis Schroeder level backup or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander secondary sort of point guard there. Yes, Devin Booker can handle it somewhat, but Paul will play maybe an extra minute or so. But I think if we expect him to miss only one game, which he did last season, I think we'll be a little bit disappointed in that. But he is a strong option there. And all these guys that we've talked about so far, so we're four tiers in and we're, you know, really at the end of the second round, start of the third round in terms of valuing these players. In tier five, there is a bunch of different guys here. We've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. We've got Russ Westbrook. We've got Kyle Lowry. And we've got Ben Simmons. Now, the value of some of these guys, Simmons and Westbrook in particular, if you're looking to discount some of their bad percentages, they are easy second round guys. Now, I think people will have issues here, Matt, with Westbrook, because they'll say, look at what he did before the bubble. Yet he had, you know, COVID and he was dealing with that in the bubble. But those 2 months beforehand, he was unbelievable. He was, you know, he was an all-NBA player. Why have you got him so low? Well, the thing to me is they had to cater everything to him, right? They had to cater that whole system. They traded away their center. There's a different coach there, number one. He's a year older. He's requested a trade as well, apparently. And I just don't think that 6 weeks, 2 month period negates what happened for the first 3 months of the season. And now he does have to share the court more with either it's DeMarcus Cousins or it's Christian Wood and a different coach and a different system. I don't have faith that he's going to be that 2 month February, March player versus what he was in October, November, December.
Yeah, I completely agree and have all those same concerns and issues. And yeah, touching back on the Mike D'Antoni coach, I think we're really going to find out this season just how good he has been for fantasy in terms of us as fantasy managers over a long period of time. That'll hurt Westbrook. And the trade rumors again, we don't know if he's going to stay in Houston, go to the Knicks, go to Detroit, go to, you know, Washington in a trade for John Wall, whatever it might be. But this tier is a perfect example of trying to group players of a similar overall value. They've all got different skill sets. Like, I love Shai Gilgeous-Alexander this year. And when I've scrolled through the projections for the first time, he was the one who first stood out, and I sent you a message. I'm like, Shai, exclamation mark, like, that was massive. And I think you've even bumped him down a little bit since then, but his numbers are just insane. Could be one of the breakout players of the season. And yeah, like you said, with Ben Simmons, depending on what you want to do with free throw percentage, you can bump him up or down a little bit. But yeah, a nice overall tier with a bit of youth and a couple of veterans as well.
I think, you know, when all is said and done with this, Shai's probably going to move up into tier four because, like, who's taking the shots? This is what I said to you when you go, what the hell, what, Shai's so high? I go, well, who's taking the shots? Who's handling the ball? Is it Ty Jerome? Like, you watched Ty Jerome last year. It's not Ty Jerome. Is it Teo Maledon? Like, no. Like, is it Hamidou Diallo? Like, come on. Like, who the hell is handling the ball? Who's taking the shots? Al Horford's not going to be scoring 30 a night. It's going to be Shai, and that might impact his efficiency. But his assist numbers were super low because basically when he was on the court last year, it was either Chris Paul handling it or Dennis Schroeder handling it. And now those options become Jerome and Maledon. It's a very, very big difference. So an assist spike, a usage spike, a scoring spike, all of those things can happen here for Gilgeous-Alexander. And don't be surprised. Like, he's at the moment looks like a real steal, 34 ADP on Yahoo. I think that's going to be a real steal for him at that level because everything is set up for him to have an absolute monster. Tier 6, we've got quite a few players in this one, Matt, a pretty deep tier. Starts with D'Angelo Russell, De'Aaron Fox, the headmaster Jamal Murray, Ja Morant, Drew Holiday. Now, some different players in there, obviously, and I think people will look at one name sticking out there being Jamal Murray and saying, well, look, he was unbelievable in the bubble. He's got to be higher than this, but I don't think that can continue because he played like 39 minutes a game and he shot 50% from three, which just has no chance of happening. So when you saw the projections for this, did you go, Murray feels a little bit low, or did you think that's about right?
I think it's about right. The thing which will dictate where he gets drafted is that point guard run, which always seems to happen in drafts. And someone said to me the other day about, is it too early to take? I think it was Murray, in the late third. And I sort of answered, depends when that point guard run starts. It often starts sort of in the late second and early third. And like we said, that there's 15 point guards inside the top 50. So if you want one, you have to get them early. But you know, yeah, I do think Jamal Murray will take a little bit of a step forward. I just think that playoff experience and just the confidence that he got from his play during those games will hold him in good stead for the season. Love Jamal Murray as well. Averaged 17 points and 7 assists on 47% last year. Well, that's a great building block from his rookie season. D'Angelo Russell back healthy with the Timberwolves. He should be a really good player. De'Aaron Fox and Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is the one who takes a little bit of a hit going to the Pelicans. But yeah, if you draft a point guard early and want another one just to secure your assists and some of those guard stats, then this is the perfect tier to find them.
Yeah, it is. There's a bunch of guys here. And this is going to be that third, fourth round run. Ja Morant's ranked 25th on ESPN, which to me is crazy. Maybe he'll be that good, but if you take him there, you just eliminate all value, and he hits no threes and gets no steals. So that's what takes him down a little bit there. Murray, yeah, look, I think this is about right. But there'll be guys that exceed this, and there'll be guys that drop off. Maybe Drew suffers a big drop off. Maybe Murray does continue to shoot 50% from three. He won't, but maybe he does. D'Angelo Russell could drop off because they might say, well, Ricky Rubio's a better player, which I think he is, but they probably won't admit that at this point. So there is some interesting players there in Tier 6. If we go on to Tier 7 now, just a couple of guys there. DeJounte Murray and Malcolm Brogdon sit in Tier 7. Murray, I imagine, we don't have confirmation of this because we just haven't heard. There's no camp, there's no press conference, we don't know. But the way that they ran things in the bubble is Murray started next to Derek White and they played well together. So I just don't see a scenario where they head into this season and Pop goes, well, nah, DeJounte, you're going back to 25 minutes and you're splitting the minutes at point guard. It just isn't going to happen. So his minutes should see a significant bump up 1 year removed from an ACL injury.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing we need to take into account with Murray is he's obviously a massive steals guy. We've got him at a plus 2.43 in steals, which makes him elite in that category. So that's one of the big reasons why he is up, what is he, just outside the top 50. But you do need to be aware of some of his deficiencies. And Malcolm Brogdon, we know he was had a really good start to the last season before missing those 19 games with various injuries, in particular that torn muscle in his quadricep. But if he can show the form that he did to start last season, he'll be a really nice pick in this range.
Yeah, Brogdon, the injuries are a concern. The other thing is we have to look at the huge assist numbers he had last year and the fact that majority of that season was done without Victor Oladipo. So how he adjusts in terms of ball handling responsibilities with Oladipo back remains to be seen. So there is some, I guess, level of skepticism that he can repeat everything that he did last year. But the other thing we look at him is he shot horribly. He was like 33 or 34% from three last season, and he'd been like a 40% guy on low volume. But can that get back up to being 36, 37? That might offset if there is a usage drop or if there is an assist drop for Malcolm Brogdon. In Tier 8, there's a name there that people will be, I guess, a little bit surprised at. Well, maybe others won't be, because this is a guy that inexplicably was ranked last season pre-draft in like at number 12 or 14, which made no sense. His ADP on Yahoo is still nonsense at number 26. We got Kemba Walker all the way down here in Tier 8 with Lonzo Ball. Now, again, you're basing this off my projection. So, Matt, there might be things here that you disagree with. Do you disagree with this for Kemba?
I don't, and I can't disagree with the numbers. You've got him projected 18 points, what, 3.5 rebounds, 4.7 assists, 2.8 threes. Obviously, the lack of steals hurt. The field goal percentage is declining. But the major thing for me in terms of Kemba this season is just his knee issue again. The Celtics have already said that they're going to ease him into the start of the season. So buyer beware there. I really don't want anything to do with Kemba Walker this year, and I think he might take a bit more of a complementary role behind Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown as well. So I'd definitely be looking at a younger player with a bit more upside around this point of the draft.
Is that younger player Lonzo Ball? Because we know that Eric Bledsoe comes in, but it's really a straight swap Bledsoe for Holiday. So for what Lonzo did last year, where he was, what, the 49th ranked player on a per-game mm-hmm. basis, I've got him a little bit lower this year, mainly because I'm just not sure how they're going to run that rotation. Plus, it's a new coach in Stan Van Gundy. Van Gundy's got a history of when he plays point guards, they just don't get over 30 or 31 minutes a night, no matter who it is. And Van Gundy's teams have always been in the bottom half or bottom third of teams in terms of pace, whereas this Pelicans team was like top two or three last year. So I don't know whether the run and gun style that the Pelicans run will override Van Gundy, or if he'll just bring in his system and slow it down. So there's some unknowns there, but if they go from like a top three team to a bottom five team in pace, and that's a wild swing, but it's not outrageous, then that's going to have an impact on a lot of these guys' numbers.
Yeah, definitely. And we know Lonzo is a strong source of assists, steals and threes, a good rebounding guard as well, but his lack of scoring and efficiency really caps his overall value. So yeah, two completely different players, and maybe one's trending down and one's trending up, but we'll see how the season unfolds.
Tier 9, we've got another Ball, LaMelo Ball, and then you've got a name that normally we would have been seeing in Tier 3 probably, and that is John Wall returning from his torn Achilles. I think with Wall, we come back from a torn Achilles, but we also forget that before that, he just had constant knee problems. So it's not just he's coming back from a torn Achilles. He had like a knee issue that was in a problem for years and years and years. So he's got that and the Achilles, and apparently he wants to be traded. He's going to be on limited minutes. He's probably going to sit out back-to-backs. Yep. So he's never getting back to that. And look, even the 2 years before he was injured, he was 30th in per game value anyway. So he's not getting back to that. The minutes will be lower. He's going to struggle with efficiency. There's just going to be drop-offs there. And then LaMelo comes in. I don't know what they're going to do with him initially. I think they should start him because, honestly, Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier aren't blokes that you hold above him for long periods of time. He's going to have horrible efficiency numbers, but like his brother, good rebounding, good assists, solid enough steals. He'll take the threes. And I think that he is probably going to, or he should be. He's not on some sites, but he should be the first rookie off the board.
Yeah, he should be. Him and then Killian Hayes probably. And I think they might as well start him, throw him straight in.
Oh, they should.
And then do you have Rozier or Graham starting next to him?
At the moment, I have Graham.
Yep.
And then but Terry I can see them putting Rozier and then playing Graham more minutes anyway, because Graham's the better player, but maybe the fit of Rozier next to LaMelo works better. But LaMelo's 6'7". Like, he's got the size that if he puts the effort in, he can guard twos and threes as well. Whereas what, Rozier's 6'3". Like, he's not tall at all. So LaMelo's got that size to theoretically guard up. So it's not like, oh, we've got these two point guards there. It's a real problem. Melo's a small forward who's a point guard, really.
Yeah. And then Devontae Graham, you know, he becomes a pretty nice six man as well and can have a ton of shots and usage off the bench. And John Wall is literally going to be 2 years almost to the day where we've seen him last on an NBA court. And, yeah, I'll leave that for someone else to take.
Look, if he's there at pick 90, I'm fine with it. But I don't even know what his current ADP sits at. 43 on Yahoo. Like, it's too high. There's no way that I'm taking him inside the top 50. Even if he returns top 50 value, I'm not taking that risk there. That's the point of it. And I had someone, and maybe that person's watching this show, that said to me, I knew that Brandon Ingram's breakout was coming last year and I drafted him in round 3. Well, regardless of the result of that, it's still a mistake. And that's like if you draft John Wall at pick 40 and he ends up as the 40th best player, it's still a mistake to do it because you're drafting at absolute best case scenario, and you know if there's a 10% chance of it working. If it works, fantastic. But it's not the odds play. It's not the probability play. So I think you've got to take that into consideration. That maybe it works out, but all the evidence we have at the moment would suggest that it probably isn't going to happen. Tier 10, we've got some interesting names here. The one that really stands out to me there is Mike Conley, who was horrible last season, like 140th best player, and then in the bubble was really, really good. We saw the minutes go up. We saw the percentages go back up. So he's got a real chance to jump ahead of, say, a LaMelo and John Wall easily. Like, he could be a tier 8 player here. The problem that I have with Conley is that Utah system does put a real clamp on point guard assist numbers. We saw it with Ricky Rubio for 2 years. We saw it last year with Conley, and that's part of the issue. Then, of course, then there is the usage that Mitchell gets. There's the return of Jordan Clarkson. But out of this group, I think he's probably the one where I go, I think he's probably the most likely to jump up, whereas guys like Rubio and Rose, who are in this tier along with Markel Fultz, are probably the two that are likely to fall down just because we just don't know what their role is going to be.
Just on Rubio again, do you have him starting next to Russell or coming off the bench?
No, coming off the bench. Initially, I thought they would, but then when they spent way too much money on Malik Beasley, it didn't make sense because if you're spending that on Beasley, so surely he's going to start. And then they'll start Anthony Edwards, the number one draft pick, and then they'll start D'Angelo Russell. Even if I think Rubio, look, and I don't think this is a controversial statement, I think he's the best out of all those four guards. I think he's the best player there. I just don't think they're going to be playing him those 30-plus minutes and starting him, even though a Rubio-Russell backcourt would work really well. Do you think that would go in and start Rubio and Russell and put Edwards at the three and bring Beasley off the bench? I just don't.
The thing when they signed Rubio was, I can't remember if it was the coach or someone in head office came out and said that it gives the Timberwolves 48 minutes of elite ball handling.
Yep.
So that kind of infers to me that Rubio will be the backup, so they can at least have one of Rubio or Russell on the court at all time. But $17 million is just a lot of money to be paying a backup point guard.
Yeah, they didn't pay him that though. So that's, I think that's part of it. Like, they didn't go out and sign him to the $17 million. No, it is a lot, but the Hawks are going to be paying Danilo Gallinari $20 million apparently, yes, to be a backup power forward. So I guess money doesn't even mean anything at this point. Look, a Rubio Russell backcourt works fine, but you just spent $60 million on Malik Beasley. You invested a number one pick in Anthony Edwards. Like, what do we do? You spend a number six pick and you traded away Dario Saric to get Jarrett Culver. Not that he's a point guard, but he's still in that guard rotation. Like, what are we actually doing here? Like, Rubio should play 30 minutes a night. Again, he's the best guard on this team. I just don't think that they will. So there is upside for him there, but there's also, they could play him 18 minutes a night and play him exclusively as a backup to Russell, and then that would obviously nerf his value.
But I guess if you are desperate for assists, then Ricky Rubio is probably your last sort of chance to get some, you know, later on. And I do quite like Markel Fultz as well. He could have a nice little jump again if he can make, you know, that similar progression that he did last season. Yeah, he could be worth a flyer, but yeah, and not much to see there with Derek Rose as we head into the final tier.
Yeah, Rose is going to get traded at some point this season. He'll get some pretty high usage, and then that'll drop off when he gets traded. Fultz, to me, doesn't have DJ Augustin. Well, not to me, in all reality. DJ Augustin's not there anymore. So the backup point guard's Cole Anthony. So it won't be a 28-20 minute split like it was with DJ. Anthony's not ready to take on 20 minutes a night, so Fultz should see an extra 2-3 minutes a night because there's no other point guard there. So he's going to have to come in and play a lot more minutes. So going from 27 a night, which he played last year, or 28 a night, to 32 a night, that automatically jumps him up. And his ADP is 132 full. So it's a real bargain there to get him. And a top 100 season for him, I think, is a pretty likely outcome.
Yep, agree.
At the end, we're at tier 11 here. There's two guys, Killian Hayes, Detroit, who should be the starting point guard. It's not guaranteed. Dwayne Casey has had some absolute head scratches in his time, so let's see what he does there. And the other one is Alfred Payton, who, again, might not be the starter. They might go to Frank Ntilikina. They might go to Dennis Smith. Who knows what the Knicks are going to do? They've got a new coach in Tom Thibodeau, so if they do rely on a starter, they might play him 35 minutes a night as well. So there is upside in both of these guys, but it could also blow up in your face. But, Matt, when you're picking at this part of the draft, like, who cares?
Yeah, go for it. And, yeah, you might as well take a flyer on Killian Hayes. As we mentioned, he should be the next rookie off the board after LaMelo Ball. And if Derrick Rose, or if or when Derrick Rose gets traded, Killian Hayes could be a really valuable player. So you might need to be a little bit patient with him early in the season, but later on he could really come into his own and be a really key player sort of heading into fantasy playoffs. And Alfred Payton, useful source of assists, rebounds and steals in the latter rounds. If that's what you want. But as you mentioned, there's still some question marks over the Knicks guard rotation.
Yeah, we just don't know what they're going to do at this point. And you're right, with Hayes, he might play 26 minutes a night for the first month and then play 33 over the next 4 months. Like, we just don't know at this point. And his shooting could be rough, but he's a good rebounder, a good assist guy. He'll shoot some threes. It's going to be rough times, but I'd rather take a flyer on the upside of Hayes than, you know, look at whoever else is, who else is even below those guys in terms of point guards. There's not a huge amount of them. Like, yeah, you're talking about Goran Dragic. I'd rather take an upside pick on a Hayes at that point. Kendrick Nunn, who's someone people will pick there, but talk about him later. People will know that he's not in this list because, Matt, you may disagree with this. I don't know how he fits in this rotation for the Heat. And people will say he was runner-up in Rookie of the Year and he started all these games and he was great. He's not good, but their rotation at the moment in the guards, Dragic, right, a good player, and he's back. Tyler Hero, we know what he did in the bubble. Avery Bradley is the new addition to that backcourt. Yes. And there's someone else that I am completely by, Duncan Robinson. So who's none getting minutes over out of those guys?
Yeah, exactly.
Look, he's not. And that's the thing. Like, you can say that they lost Jay Crowder because they did. They replaced him with Mo Harkless, and then they added Avery Bradley into the guard rotation. So someone has to miss out in that guard rotation. And maybe you could suggest that they'll just eliminate Myers Leonard and they'll play Bam Adebayo at center and have Iguodala and Harkless take all the power forward minutes with Olynyk and then run with more guards and Robinson at the three and Butler at the four. Maybe they do that, but they just also paid $9 million to bring Myers Leonard back. I don't think they're doing that just so he can sit on the bench entirely. And regardless, Nunn's not having a 27-minute-a-night role that he did last season. And even then, I don't even think he was a top... I know I'm just going on about Kendrick Nunn here. But even then, he was, what, the 134th-ranked player in 29 minutes a game? There is no way that he is returning that level of value this year, would be my guess.
That's it. And he doesn't even make my shooting guard tiers. So, yeah, neither of them.
Guys, I reckon that'll... No, I reckon, because that is. That's the 11 tiers. That is the point guard tiers done. Matt is going to be back to talk shooting guards with us, so make sure you're checking that out. And the best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up. Leave a comment down below. Matt, thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Good to talk to you again.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.